from air and shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Well, good morning, everyone. This looks like a room that's exactly the same as whenever we have an oral argument. So I really appreciate all of you coming. It's a wonderful day for everyone here, every judge here, because they get rid of me. And it's a wonderful day for Judge Davis, because he thinks right now he's going to ascend to a post of great prominence. He'll learn. But I first of all want to thank, we have people here from a number of different organizations, and if I began naming people, I think it would be difficult to make sure I didn't miss somebody, number one, and number two, it would take you longer. Some of the chairs don't have cushions on them, and so it would be longer than you probably would want. But I do want to recognize two of our fellow judges who come from the Court of Appeals for Armed Forces, Chip Erdman and Andy Efron, a senior judge. So thank you very much. We have people from the Department of Veterans Affairs here, both the board and the General Counsel's Office, the litigation group at the General Counsel's Office. We have people from Veterans Service Organization, people who represent specifically private practitioners, national organizations of Veterans Advocates. We have a staff from the court, and I'm very happy that they are here. And mostly, my family is here, and my friends, and Judge Davis is also. I'm sure he will want to remark about their presence. I do want to, and we have people from the Veterans Service Organizations. Sherman Goins is sitting right back here, and Sherman is the Executive Director of the Paralyzed Veterans of America, and I'm very happy that he honored the court by being here today. And of course, he just happens to be a Marine. And I'd like to introduce another special person to me. He's sitting right over here, Daniel Cortez. Daniel served with me in Vietnam. He was wounded in combat. He is now retired. But he still is an op-ed writer for a number of newspapers, and a wonderful person, and I'm glad we're able to connect after a number of years. So, it is, for 13 years now, I've had the responsibility to judge other people. And it's a difficult thing to do, believe it or not, and sometimes, many times, you feel that you need to do a better job at what you do. But there are other people that judge the performance of the chief judge, and first of all, the staff does. And they judge the chief by the way that the chief takes care of them, sees their needs, makes sure that they have the things they need to do their job, and generally looks after their welfare. The other judges judge the chief judge by the chief's collegiality, the way the chief manages things, which sometimes can be very trying. My family judges me all the time. As Virginia says, behind every successful man, there's a surprised woman. She has a surprised look on her face right now. This morning, when we were hurrying to get here, I was trying to hurry everybody out, and everybody was saying, it's your fault, your fault. My son Jack, we've been married for 43 years, and my son Jack says, well, do you think the marriage will last? But I think it will, unless unless being at home is a problem. So, well, it really is time for me to say goodbye to a great number of friends and colleagues. As with all such things, such affairs, it's a time filled with the prospect of new adventures, and it's also a time for remorse for the things I still believe are undone and must be left to others. Now, a lot has happened in the Law of Veterans Benefits since 1990 when I first began this work. I thought I would probably do it for 2 or 3 years, all the law would be settled, and maybe I'd find something else to do. It's really been a wonderful experience. I began the work when the Veterans Judicial Review Act was published, when it became law, and I've had a great experience watching most of the major things that have happened in this area of the law come to pass. The last 2 weeks, I've been bringing home things, and much to the horror of Virginia, who's told me, stick them in the garage, I don't care where you put them, but they're not coming in the house. But almost all of what I loaded in my little Mazda was things that made me remember things. And last night, I was putting in the last load, and it did have some doozies in it. It seemed like each item I picked up reminded me of some event. And one of the first things, or many things I saw, was a letter from a woman by the name of Karen Hansen. One of the first people I represented, and Karen, when I talked to her, she said she was seeking indemnity compensation. Dependents and indemnity compensation because of the death of her husband while he was in service and was having a difficult time getting it. And she lived in a very small town in South Dakota. And she says, oh, I work in a baseball card factory. And I thought, boy, this is great. Until she told me that this baseball card factory was 90 miles away and she worked the night shift. And that was the only way that she could really make ends meet because was the only job that was really available with the sufficient income that she needed to make ends meet. And so she would drive 90 miles to work and 90 miles back at night in South Dakota in the winter, well, it's the summer, obviously. And she said, you could only call me between 8 and 10 in the morning. She said, because otherwise I'm asleep and then I have to go to work. So, we were successful in getting her dependents and indemnity compensation, and she called me as soon as she got her check and was so happy, and she said, this changed my life. And this is the type of experiences that many of you who represent veterans have all the time, and it is very rewarding, and I think it's been wonderful, wonderful work. I also found something else that I thought would be interesting. Art, would you mind walking up here, Art Stitchman? Just real quickly. I can't reach back there. I want to give you something. I can't reach you. This, Bart, is the very first legal education course that was given on the Veterans Judicial Review Act. Bart taught it with David Addlestone. I attended it because I thought maybe someday I might want to do this, so I decided I'd better check it out. And so, Bart, I want to give it back to you. I'm telling you, we're working on number 28 of these right now, so I don't know if it's obsolete. That's why we're working on 28. There you are. Thank you, Curtis. You can see why, things like this kind of make me think back. And pretty soon, Isabel Massa, who was my assistant, she was helping me, and she said, I've got to go. And she's the type of person that usually stays until the last thing is done. And I said, oh, Izzy, you have some good plans tonight? She says, no, she says, I just can't stand any more stories. And so, if you'll indulge me for one minute, there is one, I would like to talk about one very important undone task. And it's one that I think everybody here could help in and should have an interest in. And here we are, all sitting in a very nice room. And if you in the room of reception, you'll see that in my soon-to-be-old chambers, I have a beautiful view of the Capitol, Judge Farley's chambers before, a beautiful view of the Washington Monument and the Mall, the Smithsonian buildings. At night, you can actually look out and see the eternal flame at Arlington Cemetery. It's wonderful. But every single judge here would give that up if veterans could have their own courthouse. And that is something that we have been talking about for as long as the court has existed, and it just hasn't been able to come to fruition. I'm not talking about a courthouse that's just stuck anywhere. I'm not talking about a courthouse that is in some place in a building that GSA just wants to get rid of. But I'm talking about a courthouse that's in a prominent place, a meaningful place, a place that shows that we, a country of laws, believes that the people who work so hard to make sure we continue to have a country of laws can have a symbol that we do. Symbols are extremely important, especially to people in the military. They mean more than just bricks and mortar. They show that there is a nation who cares. And so, what I have personally found, you say lacking, that's not the right word, is a consistent approach with a long-term plan to see this idea come to fruition. Every chief judge has worked on this, but I can tell you that events overtake you. You have cases that you still have to decide. You have the court that you have to manage. You start working toward this goal, and it just becomes too difficult to do. So I've said this at the judicial conference, perhaps somewhat rushed and inartful. What I believe that we need is a group of people, both inside and outside of the veterans community, who are prominent, who know the ways of Washington, and who are dedicated for the long term to work on this goal. I don't know who those people are, but they have to be people that are focused, and a plan has to be developed, and it needs to be worked on and worked on hard. So, it's one of the beauties of being a judge, is that you can think their thoughts, and somebody else has to execute them. And so I will only tell you what I believe needs to happen. And I believe it doesn't have to be just in Washington, D.C. Indeed, too bad Judge Nance isn't here. He would tell you what I always say. The draft notices were not just sent to Washington, D.C. And so everybody in this country has an interest in having a court that makes sure that veterans are entitled to a review of matters from somebody outside of the VA. Not that the VA is not looking after the veteran. Not that they need somebody to watch over them like a watchdog. It's just, as I think Judge Castle often likes to say, I think it's Justice Jackson that said that they're not last because they're infallible. They're infallible because they last. And so we're not last, but we are a group from outside of the VA that looks over things and looks over carries for veterans just like anybody else, but also makes certain that the interests of the United States and the Secretary are protected. So, enough preaching, I guess. I begin telling you other stories like the great time I had at Judge Sherman's baptism, or and before Judge Greenberg draws his first long-term care premium, I want to introduce you to your new Chief Judge, Judge Davis. Judge Davis, the court is going to be very, very pleased and very fortunate to have Judge Davis as the Chief Judge. His biography is in your program, and I won't go over it, except to say, here's an individual who started out working as an elevator operator in the Capitol so he could pay for law school. Eventually went to worked on a committee on the Hill, then worked in government in very responsible positions in various government agencies, and has tremendous experience in administrative law as well as other areas of law. He was a law professor at two law schools, and so he brings both practical and academic experience and experience of hard work to the court. In addition, and most importantly perhaps, he was in the Navy, in the reserves, and I'm sure on active duty, and he served in a combat zone in Bosnia. So if there's anybody who understands the law and how to apply it, and the travails that servicemen have when they serve our country, it's Bob Davis. So, Bob, I do have one thing that is the secret, not told by many people. Nobody told me, but it is the secret to becoming and surviving as a Chief Judge. Now, I think I've told you before, I've often felt like, I know Judge Kramer said that being Chief Judge is like grabbing the reins of power and nothing's attached. I know Judge Berkeley said it's like being the lead dog and a dog sled, you do more work, but the view is better. But I have always felt, or I shouldn't say always, but oftentimes felt like I'm the only fire hydrant in a neighborhood of eight dogs. So anyway, I have something that is going to help you, because until I found this, my life was miserable. Now, this is a book written by a good friend of my daughter's, and I hesitate to read it, but I probably should. The name of the book is Someday a Bird Will Poop on Me. So, if you will, if I can just take a moment, the story starts out in your life. And it says, I'm not the sort of person who can see into the future, but I do know that sometime in the long life you have ahead of you, there will be a day when a bird will poop on you. Because there are birds in the sky, and because there are people down below, and because we are one of those. So it just makes sense that someday you'll feel something land on your head, or on your shoulder, or on your bow tie. It's a bow tie wearing kind of day. and they'll reach for it and feel the goo that is bird poop. Probably every single day somewhere in the world, someone is getting pooped on by a bird. It might be even right now, as this book is happening to you. Someone in China is getting pooped on by a Chinese bird. Or someone in Mexico is getting pooped on by a Mexican bird. Or someone in Maine is getting pooped on by a visiting Canadian bird. It just happens. You won't know when. Other than it will be the worst possible time to happen. Like the day you're wearing an important clothes for a court. Or the day when you're running late for a ceremony during which you are being honored for never being late for anything. Now that's just how it happens. It won't be the day that you leave your house thinking, well, today I'm sure a bird will poop on me, so I'll bring a change of clothes and leave early and bring some bird poop. So the day that the bird poops on you, you have two choices. And this is the secret. You can get really mad and stop and say, I don't want this to happen, and let it ruin the rest of your day, or you can remain calm. Wash it off, laugh about it, and think to yourself, now what are the chances that I won't have another bird poop on me for a while? And if they do, what a hilarious story it would be. Now, I do want to say one more thing, and that is I want to recognize Judge Lance, who unfortunately, due to family business, could not be here today, but he will actually be, for administrative reasons and other reasons, the 8th Chief Judge of the Court over the weekend, and then Judge Davis will assume duties as the Chief Judge on Monday, so I must say that. You can see Judge Lance's biography, quite distinguished biography, in the program. Also, I want to recognize Judge Schoen, who, because of a very recent death in her family, was not able to make it today, and she came up and extended her congratulations to me, and obviously we feel sorry for her and her family. So, now it's time, Judge Davis, to turn over the reins of power to you. So, it is with the greatest of pleasure that I hand you the gavel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims and give you that long position. Thank you, Judge Hagel. You all just got a flavor of why we love him so much here and why it's pretty sad to see him go. Thank you all for attending this ceremony. As I look out over the room, it gives me great pleasure, and I'm sure my colleagues as well, to see basically people we work with every day. Obviously, those of you who have come from afar, our families, in particular, I'd like to thank the court staff, our invited guests, visitors, our families, my mother, my sister, my son, my brother, my nieces, nephews, and all the things which make our lives so complete, to share this special occasion with us. I'm not going to individually thank the people who have been in early in the morning with me and late in the evening as we stayed in preparation for this ceremony over the past month and a half to prepare for today's event, because they know who they are,
But I have to mention at least a couple of names, and that's Inga Ellis. Where is she? And recognize her. She's probably working. I don't mean to embarrass you, but I want everyone to know that without you coming to work with us over the last month, this would have been much more difficult. So thank you so much, Sherry, Toby Williams, as well, my confidential assistant. But there's just a whole host of people I could thank, but I wanted at least to mention those two people because they've been cracking the whip on everybody else. I have guests here from grade school days, from high school, and from college, from other working environments, and I just wanted to thank you all for spending your time with us today. Judge Hagel has been an exceptional colleague and an even better friend to get to know and work with. He has, as you've seen, an easygoing Midwestern manner, having grown up in Indiana. Midwestern roots that he and I share in common because I grew up in Iowa. After having been conceived in Florida during my parents' honeymoon. I didn't know if I should reveal that, Mom, or not, but I thought I'd. With his easygoing manner, though, comes an incisive intellect, a methodical precision to procedure, and a heartfelt commitment to those he works with and to those he loves. During his too brief tenure as the court's seventh chief judge, he has continued to plow ground and make progress in our mission to find a courthouse, we just heard that, for the newest federal court in the country. These facilities are nice, but the symbolism that he mentioned and the importance of securing a courthouse for this court is very critical. He has been responsible for making sure that the court is prepared to continue operations remotely in the face of natural disasters or terrorist attacks, or what we had lately was a problem with an overflowing toilet, or subway delays, or snowstorms. He's overseen the implementation of the ability of the court to effectively use video conferencing. He has pushed through the need to upgrade computer equipment in order to place the court in a state-of-the-art technological footing. He has led the charge in getting exposure for the court through the outreach program and holding oral arguments around the country in law schools, and has helped to develop the first ever telework policy for the court. He encouraged and worked with our Human Resources Department to develop the judge's retirement handbook. He has worked with the U.S. Marshals in an effort to improve the security for court personnel. And let me just give you an example. He's laid the foundation for preparing for the digital elevators that will allow court personnel a direct line from underground parking to chambers. He is selfless. He labored over spending a very small amount of money in order to build a pass-through door in his own chambers, and decided not to build it, but did not hesitate when public office employees asked for a treadmill to help break up the strain from constantly sitting at their desks. He sat in the public office the better part of a day to get a sense of how that exceptionally dedicated staff works to move cases through the court. And he didn't hesitate to sign off on requests for court staff to get the Vario desk, you know, those stand-up desks you can work with, allowing them to work standing up. And with all these projects going on, he still maintained a full caseload. Now, you might think with all of these accolades that Judge Hagel walks on water. He will be the first, however, to tell you that he doesn't. Come to think of it, I don't even know if this Naval Academy graduate can swim. I'm sure he probably can. But the attribute that he exhibits among the many that he has, and the one that I admire the most in him, is that he's very simply a kind and decent man. Judge Hagel, I miss you. And I look forward to your return as a recalled senior judge in the not too distant future. Pleasure of introducing David H. Myers, the Director of Case Evaluation, Placement Component for the Veterans Pro Bono Consortium Program. Mr. Myers retired from the United States Navy after 28 years of enlisted service and commissioned service, including 24 years as a Navy Judge Advocate. Mr. Myers.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge Davis, Judge Hagel, distinguished members of the current court, Senior Judge Nebaker, Senior Judge Mormon, retired Judge Farley, friends and colleagues, it is my honor and privilege to stand before this court today as a representative of the Veterans Consortium Pro Bono Program. My mission is to convey to Judge Hagel our thanks and appreciation for his contributions to that program. However, while it is altogether fitting and proper for us to do that, we feel we must also add our thanks for his service as a Marine Corps officer, as general counsel and advocate of veterans through Paralyzed Veterans of America, and his distinguished service on this court. With that in mind, I would like to focus on his contributions to the pro bono program. As a plank owner, to use a Navy term, and founding father, his efforts with Chief Judge Nebaker to establish the program were vital, and his efforts for the decade that followed provided the foundation for the organization's continuing success. After leaving PVA for the bench, he continued to recognize the program in public forums, and perhaps most importantly, he showed us trust and respect by issuing orders asking us to seek counsel for cases of major import, a mission which we gladly accepted and were more than pleased to do. Indeed, we got one yesterday, Judge Hagel. With these thoughts in mind, the program is pleased to present to Judge Hagel a token of our respect and thanks, which is a photograph of the 1955 Dodgers, a team of Judge Hagel's youth, which reflects more than just his lifelong love of baseball.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, my goodness. Look at that. Oh.
There are two parts to this gift. The war part is a poem honoring the world champions written by Pulitzer Prize winner and Dodger fan Marianne Moore. I would note that while Ms. Moore did win a Pulitzer, she never had a poem of dissent published in the Veterans Law Reporter. More important are all the Dodgers themselves. These are the boys of summer who were men of the greatest generation. On this team, there were 15 veterans, men who left their field to serve their country. The group includes seven soldiers, including pitcher Clem Levine, who was a paratrooper, six sailors, and two Marines. Some served by playing baseball in far distant locations, and it is a long way from Okinawa to Ebbets Field. However, two merit special mention. One is Second Lieutenant Jackie Robinson, United States Army, whose leadership would change the game, the country, and the world. The second is Judge Hagel's boyhood hero, Bill Hodges. The big first baseman enlisted in the United States Marine Corps and saw action at Tinian and Okinawa with anti-aircraft batteries, ultimately earning a Bronze Star. Having noted the intent of our gift to touch on baseball, veterans, poetry, and the greatest generation of which these men were a vital part, I am pleased to present this gift to Judge Hagel with the deepest appreciation of the Veterans Consortium Pro Bono Program and a wish for a continuing wish for fair winds and following seas. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Now, Judge Hagel, I have the pleasure of presenting you with a couple of small tokens of our appreciation for your leadership as Chief Judge and your good nature as colleague. We have a picture of everyone at the court, signed by everyone at the court, with the cup seal. I have another gift. And this is a plaque. I will read it before I present it to him. In the matter of the retirement of Lawrence B. Hagel, Lawrence B. Hagel was appointed as judge of the court on December 15, 2003, and served as chief judge from August 7, 2015 until his retirement in October 7, 2016. During these years, he played a vital role in advancing the development of this, the nation's newest national judicial tribunal. He dedicated himself to maintaining the court's integrity as a judicial body and to making others in the legal community aware of the court's important work. As the court's seventh Chief Judge Hagel concerned himself with the welfare of the court staff and the advancement of the court's technical capabilities. He upgraded the court's computing capability, making possible advancements in both audio and video communication. These advancements enable the court's work to proceed in the event an emergency renders the court's current facilities inoperative. Before becoming chief judge, he served on several court committees where in each area he touched, his interest, encouragement, and efforts nurtured the seeds of the creed. Throughout his tenure on the bench, Chief Judge Hagel promoted the law school education initiative and continued to explore the feasibility of constructing a courthouse dedicated to the business of this court. Throughout his years of service to this court, Chief Judge Hagel contributed significantly to the court's jurisprudence, creating a legacy that will not fade. Chief Judge Hagel has earned the highest respect of all who have been privileged to benefit from his leadership and dedication. On consideration of the foregoing, it is ordered that Lawrence B. Hagel will take with him our gratitude for the years of outstanding service he has rendered to the court, our admiration for his many accomplishments, the warmth of our continued friendship, and our best wishes. Mr. One other gift for Judge Hagel. And I have to tell you, as we prepared for the ceremony, Judge Hagel kept telling me in his kind and deferential manner, Bob, this really is for you. So organize the ceremony and invite whoever you want to be there. So in keeping with David Meyer's presentation, and knowing that Judge Hagel is a baseball fan, and in fact, in the early days of our
coming to the bench, several of us got together, brought a package, including Judge Norman, Judge Hagel, myself, a couple of our colleagues from the Federal Circuit, I think that's Ernie from there, and bought tickets to the Nationals. And so we worked out and watched people So the active and retired judges, and on behalf of them, and the senior judges in court, would like to present to you, Judge Hagel, a gift certificate for a VIP experience to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. Which includes exclusive hours, after hours access to the Hall of Fame, and special behind the scenes tours, as well as two nights at the Landmark in Bed and Breakfast. I believe he now understands that it really is about him. Whether by accident or by design, we have the privilege of being a part of one of the most unique and unusual federal appellate courts in the country. From its early fledgling years, beginning in 1988, until today, we have seen the court evolve, grow, and mature. In the short 12 years that I have been on the court, I have seen the area of veterans law develop and expand. In 2004, there were but a few law review articles written about veterans law and no case books. Thankfully, the National Veterans Legal Services Program had its two-volume Veterans Benefits Manual and laws, rules, and regulations that many of us have relied on for most of our careers. There were only 15 volumes of Westlaw devoted to veterans' decisions at that time as well. There were no law school clinics devoted to veterans' practice and no courses on veterans' law offered. Today, we have a significant body of law contained in 27, soon to be 28 bound Westlaw volumes. We have law school clinics working with veterans that exist at a sizable number of law schools, and it would be unusual not to find a veterans law course offered at many law schools. Moreover, the literature in veterans law has matured with many authors writing and publishing articles on a wide variety of issues affecting veterans, the Department of Veterans Administration, and the court. There are several books on veterans law and a casebook recently published on veterans law. A significant sign that the work of the court and the veterans law field in general is maturing is found in the articles that are critical of the court. Articles that call for the court to examine where it is and where it's going. Examine its practices and rules and its manner of deciding cases. I view these developments not as negatives, but as great signs that we are a healthy, vibrant community existing at the critical intersection of law and medicine. We have plugged into the electronic age with our case management and electronic filing systems. We now have a historical society just incorporated this year. That's begun work on preserving artifacts and sharing the unique history of the court with the general public through programs and lectures. And Bart, I might ask you to consider donating those, that course that Larry gave you, that Judge Hagel gave you, to the archives committee. Just think about it. We continue to work toward the acquisition and development of a veterans courthouse to honor the sacrifices of our veterans. And through it all, through the very short 28 years of this court's existence, on the continuum of time, it is you, the people who work here at the court, whether it is in direct support of the court or representing clients before the court, it is you all who carry the torch of providing justice to that most deserving community of veterans. Our mission is a noble one, to resolve difficult claims from our nation's veterans. And our cause is just, to provide justice in a timely, efficient, and fair manner. And to that end, in the brief 3-year period in which I am a steward for the care and progress of the court, I would like to focus my energy on 3 areas in order to accomplish the challenges ahead. First, I want to focus on you who work here, the court staff. I want to make sure that we are supporting you in every way that we can in order to help you do your jobs as best as you can and enjoy doing it. We work in a wonderful environment in our nation's capital, at this special and unique court. There is great reason for each and every one of us to wake up every day looking forward to coming to work here. And when our day's work is finished, we should leave feeling satisfied and fulfilled that we have done the best we can do given the issues that we confront in every single case before us. So I want to help all of us get to that point of coming to work proud of what lies ahead for the day and leaving feeling satisfied and proud of what has been accomplished that day. If you need more training and would like to attend courses that will help you become better at what you do, then I want your managers to support that ambition. If attending conferences with people who work in a capacity similar to yours at other courts will help you learn and exchange information with others, then I want to encourage our managers to support that. If there are tools that we can use to better help you do your work, then I want our managers to support that. Let's work together to find ways to support efforts to work smarter, more efficiently, and with great satisfaction. The reputation that we build is a direct result of how well we treat each other and the people we serve. I want to cultivate a culture of civility at this court. When people talk about this court, wherever they may be, I want a common refrain to be heard that in some way reflects that the person who called the court was greeted with a live person on the phone and was treated politely and with care and concern. That the person who stopped by the court was treated politely with care and concern. That the lawyers who call the public office and appear before judges of this court are treated politely with care and concern. The files we pick up on a daily basis represents a person whose life is affected by the decisions we make, and that person's life we treat with care and concern. We should strive to be known as a very civil place, a civil court of appeals, with dedicated, hardworking people who care about others. So I want you to know that I care about each of you and the quality of work and the quality of your lives at the court and away. Life is not all about our work here, but it also includes the things that we do beyond our workday to round out our lives. I seek for all of us to have balanced lives, which I believe immeasurably contributes to the productivity of this court. I will commit to you that I will use my energy and the goodwill that we have to improve our work environment at the court. Second, we have enjoyed and will continue to build on the outstanding relationships that we have with Congress, both the Senate and the House, the practicing bar of this court, filled with exceptionally talented and dedicated people who not only do an impressive job representing veterans before this bench, but who also selflessly engage in the many committees of the bar and the court in an effort to improve all aspects of the work that we do. Similarly, the veterans organizations and the pro bono consortium are constant reminders of the progress we have made and continue to make from the early days when most veterans had to engage this complex regulatory system on their own, without representation. Today, because of the veteran service organizations and the Pro Bono Consortium, very few veterans who seek representation are left without representation. Given all that, however, I believe we must better engage our constituent groups to make sure that we are addressing problems that arise in the practice before this court. While it is true that we just concluded our excellent judicial conference last April, and we also had a bar and bench conference in May of 2015, many of the good ideas that are generated at panel discussions and breakout sessions get lost in the passage of time. We have mined gold nuggets at times and implemented procedural and rule changes, like the development of Rule 33 staff conferences that was a product of our judicial retreat in 2010 in Maryland. As far as I know, however, we are not working on any recommendations contained in the after-action report from the Bar and Bench Conference last year. So I am prompted to ask, what have we done for each other lately? I submit to you that in the face of the need for much improvement, we cannot rest on one example of change. Change must be constant, and we must do a much better job of listening to each other and learning from each other. If we listen to each other, we will learn, and then we can act to continue to improve what we do. We have the advantage of being a small and nimble court. We can do things and get things done without an overlay of a huge bureaucracy. We must prepare to be at the forefront of being an efficient appellate court with national jurisdiction. We need to be creative, flexible, and fluid as we encounter larger caseloads and fewer judges. We have to work smarter. So I would appreciate your support and help as we take on the challenges ahead to figure out ways of improving all aspects of what we do. This will require that we take a critical look at ourselves, the court, what we do, why we do, and how we do. To that end, I will be establishing an advisory cabinet with representatives selected from all of our constituent groups. Department of Veterans Affairs, General Counsel, Board of Veterans Appeals, the Practicing Bar, the Veterans Service Organizations, and Veterans Legal Associations like the National Veteran Legal Services Program and the National Organization of Veterans Advocates. The mission of the advisory cabinet will be to engage each other on a periodic but more regular basis than the limited opportunities that currently exist, to engage on issues, problems, procedures, changes that we can make and that we can agree on that may need priority for action. And then we will act to make improvements. My hope is that through more regular opportunities to have meaningful discussions with a purpose, we might be in a better position to implement changes that we agree will be important priorities and beneficial to all of us. So I will commit to you, our constituencies, that I will use my energy over the next 3 years to listen, to hear you, and to act on matters that affect you and your work with the court. Third, I will focus my energy on improving the working relationships among my colleagues on the bench. And let me share a little secret with you. And perhaps many of you know this already, but getting agreement among 5 or 7 or 9 judges is no easy feat. Getting 2 judges to agree is not easy. If there is one word that will describe my administration for the next 3 years, it will be transparency, consistency, consensus, and action. Everybody count that? Transparency, consensus, and action. It's imperative that the Board of Judges act and operate together as a unified whole in order to accomplish the missions ahead. As the Chief, I will inform you on important administrative matters and seek advice from you in order to build a solid consensus on the path forward. Now, perhaps more than any time before, we need to work as a team together. I know that there will be debates and disagreements on issues, but we need to keep in mind the common goal that we all share, efficiently deciding cases, obtaining a courthouse, and elevating the stature of the court. My primary concern when I accepted my judicial appointment was to fairly and efficiently decide cases in a timely manner. That will continue to be my goal. To that end, however, I will make sure that all chambers are functioning as efficiently as possible, and that you, my colleagues, are getting the support that you need to enable you to do your jobs better. We have challenges ahead that will require that we work together as a board of judges for a common good of the court. Incoming case projections lead me to believe we may begin to see 5,000 and upwards of 5,000 cases annually. The Department of Veterans Affairs is hiring more administrative judges and more attorneys, which suggests that productivity there may increase and a concomitant increase in our caseload may be inevitable. The immediate future for us is challenging. We have 8 judges today, but tomorrow, the loss of Judge Hagel, we will have 7 judges. By December, with the retirement of Judge Castle, we will have 6 judges. And possibly by early spring of 2017, we will have 5 active judges. Whether we will have a full court of 9 judges permanently is unknown until Congress acts on pending legislation. Whether we will have our previous statutory complement of 7 active judges is unknown until the President nominates and the Senate confirms replacements for retired judges. Whether and when vacancies that currently exist will be filled is part of the judicial appointment process, and any action regarding nominations is unlikely until sometime after the presidential election. As Jeffrey Toobin says in his book, The Nine, elections impose rituals of transition on the executive and legislative branches, but the judiciary, especially the Supreme Court, glides uninterrupted into the future. The justices take their places from behind the red curtain on the first Monday in October. They are usually the same ones who appeared the year before, and they are likely to be there the following October as well. The court is defined more by continuity than by change, but still at some moments, even the hushed corridors of the court crackle with anticipation of a new order. We are at that moment now with this court. The election looms a month away, and change is imminent in the executive and legislative and indeed in the judicial branch here. So our challenges are many, but I am confident that we will meet these challenges and excel, not just succeed. As a result, I anticipate I will implement a robust recall policy to enlist the assistance of our very capable senior judges. We may explore the use of an appellate commissioner to assist the court with motions, petitions, other matters that can be resolved by a commissioner. And I commit to you that I will continue to work to find ways to make our operations more efficient, to include how we manage our caseload, our circulation and review process, our single judge and our panel decision processes. I will continue to cultivate and improve on the strong relationships we have enjoyed with our veterans committees on Capitol Hill, and of course our other constituencies in the bar and veteran service organizations. I will devote energy to obtaining a courthouse for our veterans to be proud of. And in the interim, I would like to continue to enhance and improve and better utilize our spaces here to present the best face we can for veterans and people who work with the court. I would like to enlist all of your support to help to move that goal forward. Talk to your friends, your representatives in the House and the Senate, and let them know how important it is for us to obtain a courthouse that represents the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans, a courthouse that any veteran can be proud of, and one that symbolizes a special place American service members occupy in this country and indeed in the world. In conclusion, I am humbled and honored by the goodwill all have shown me as I accept this gavel and responsibilities that go with it as Chief Judge of this court. Many of you I have worked with know me, and you know I like to get things done. I appreciate your support to accomplish the tasks ahead. Thank you. thank you all very much. Before I close this session of this of the court, I have a couple of announcements. Please join us for refreshments on this floor in Judge Hagel's. Judge Hagel has kindly opened his chambers to us, and when you exit the courtroom, you'll find refreshments and hors d'oeuvres on the 11th floor foyer. Once the session is closed, the judges will leave the bench through the curtains in the back of the bench and go to the roving room, and then we will join you for the reception. With no other business of the court, on behalf of all the judges, I thank you all for helping to make this a special and memorable event. The ceremonial session of the court is now closed.